Los Angeles turns out in force to scream a welcome to two of the war's outstanding heroes, General Blood and Guts Patton and General Jimmy Doolittle. Along the route, nearly 2 million people turn out to acclaim the man who beat the Germans at their own game of mechanized warfare.
These old newsreels, once common in movie theaters, presented a black and white world of good and evil. America was always the hero.
In France, the city of Caen, like much of Europe, almost completely destroyed during the war, is slowly but surely rising again due to Marshall Plan aid. Caen, the center of bitter fighting in the Allied invasion of Normandy, is being helped by ECA funds. Its people have lived in ruins through five harsh winters, but are now moving into the dozens of new buildings which the French have constructed with American help.
I'm David Brancaccio. Today our world is a murkier place. Every day the latest headlines reflect a world filled with fear.
Nine civilians were killed in a bombing raid.
90 people have been killed in a double suicide attack in Iraq.
Markets around the world continue to slide. Europe and Asia already
70 people have feared dead after a powerful earthquake struck.
Terrorism, war, disaster, and disease are grim realities brought to our doorstep in our increasingly connected world. And these realities ultimately shape America's national security and foreign policies. But fear itself cannot drive our daily lives. What role should America play in the 21st century world? Can the United States be a positive role model? Will other nations follow? We'll examine these questions and more in the special program Beyond Fear, America's Role in an Uncertain World. Correspondents Kristen McHugh, Simon Marks, and Jocelyn Ford are busy gathering material from around the world and here in the United States, and we wanted to bring you a taste of what they've been finding. First, to the Horn of Africa, where we find Kristen McHugh.
I'm walking along a narrow dirt path used for thousands of years by animals and nomads traveling from Ethiopia through Djibouti. Eastern Africa has long been considered a breeding ground for terrorists and terror activities. Strategic U.S. military strikes on suspected Al-Qaeda hideouts in Somalia in early 2007 briefly earned headlines, but America's efforts to undermine terrorist organizations in this region go far beyond traditional military warfare.
When we left Djibouti, we came down through Dakhil. And then we went to through Gor Abo, and we passed Yuboki. And then right here is where we took a left turn at the tires on the hill and went out into the desert.
Since 2002, the U.S. Central Command has operated the Combined Joint Task Force Horn of Africa. The operation's goal is to provide long-term regional stability through short-term development and assistance programs.
What we're doing is getting a grid on the well, is to making sure we know exactly where it is on a grid.
Here today, the 1132nd Army Well Drilling Team from Mooresville, North Carolina, is surveying a water well for rehabilitation.
29 minutes, 296.
We're seemingly in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by desert, steep mountains, exotic animals, and a small oasis. But the U.S. military says this project is part of the global war on terror.
Do we need elevation or anything like that?
The terrorist organizations go into countries like this, and they'll go in and promise these people money, promise them services so that they can use their children or their younger men and younger women to do terrorist acts. What we're doing here, we're actually doing more of a preemptive strike.
Kristen, thanks a lot. One area where the United States has had a mixed global leadership record is in safeguarding nuclear material. Simon Marks is digging into that story from both Ukraine and India.
David, hello from Jadugura, 900 miles southeast of Delhi in a spectacularly picturesque part of India. But right now we are 600 feet below ground in a part of the country that is of central importance to India's nuclear industry. Jadugura is home to India's largest uranium mine, and we've come here to explore this country's nuclear aspirations. As you may know, in a break with policy, the Bush administration has given the Indian government the green light to go ahead with both civil and military nuclear programs, even as it tries to stop countries like Iran and North Korea from doing the same. It is a controversial move, even here in India, and the head of the country's uranium corporation, Ramendra Gupta, has been telling us why India needs to develop its nuclear potential.
You know, because of restrictions on India, we had to develop our own mines for producing uranium for our internal requirement. This deal is only helping us to create or to produce more nuclear power for our civilian use, because if we want to sustain plus 8% growth, we need more power.
Of course, critics of the deal say it blows a hole in the global system of nuclear non-proliferation. And certainly in other parts of the world, the US has pursued radically different policies in a bid to prevent the world's nuclear materials from falling into the hands of terrorists. So when we wrap up here in India, we'll be heading to the former Soviet Republic of Ukraine to see how the US bankrolled moves to place that country's nuclear industry under lock and key. It's quite a study in contrasts. David?
Correspondent Jocelyn Ford is in Banda Aceh, Indonesia. She's looking at how American aid following the 2004 tsunami is changing the region for better or worse.
David, I'm at the brand new fish market in Banda Aceh. Not far from this new market, there's still a large boat sitting on top of a house. It's an informal memorial in the area hit hardest by the December 2004 tsunami. The tsunami was a natural disaster of unprecedented proportions. The wave killed 170,000 here in Aceh and left a 500,000 homeless. But the natural disaster also helped bring an end to 30 years of brutal conflict. The tsunami gave momentum to peace talks between independent-minded Free Aceh rebels and the Indonesian military. The outpouring of tsunami aid from around the world, the largest aid program since the Marshall Plan, is playing an important role in bolstering the new peace. The United States, after initially dragging its feet, is now recognized as one of the more generous donors through the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID. The U.S. government is spending hundreds of millions of dollars on projects of all types to support tsunami victims and to reinforce the peace agreement. In the small mountain village of Runga Runga, former rebels are helping to construct a new outdoor market. The U.S.-funded project is aimed at healing the deep distrust in this community. Johnny is a charismatic man with a boyish grin. He says during the conflict, half of the village supported rebels like him and half were on the side of the Indonesian government. Now he is serving as a contractor and supplying construction material to the market project. But American aid is not without controversy. The showcase American project is the construction of this coastal road between two of Aceh's major towns.
From the people of the United States, projects road from Banda Aceh to Malabo.
A large sign at the start of the road proudly announces the project. Amid the local hype, a new report issued by the U.S. Government Accountability Office heavily criticizes USAID for its management of the road project. But local officials and residents say the problems hampering the road should not overshadow the good work USAID and others are doing to help rebuild Aceh. But perhaps the best judge of the road project is this young landowner.
America good. America good.
This student, who lost his family in the tsunami, plans to use the money he earns from the sale of his land needed for the road project to fulfill his dream of becoming a teacher.
Thanks, Jocelyn. I think we have some engaging and surprising material. I hope you'll join me for Beyond Fear, America's Role in an Uncertain World.